one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. My message is that let's get back to work. Let's get back to living. Let's be smart about it. And those of us who are 70 plus, we'll take care of ourselves, but don't sacrifice the country. Don't do that.
Yes, we are in a whole new world of crazy, everybody. It is Friday, March 27th, 2020. Welcome to the launch of the reality TV Maze Runner Hunger Games Spectacular. It is Friday, March 27th, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop Podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol Muckraker-in-Chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, it's going to be a bit freewheeling from the lockdown once again, everybody. It's just so much going on, but we're going to get through a bunch of stuff. We've got to talk, of course, about America's crisis daddy, Andrew Cuomo. Yes, he is quickly becoming the dark horse candidate for president with his calming and soothing press conferences during the current pandemic. Have Dems finally found their messiah? We shall see. Are you willing to risk your life for the economy? Well, Lieutenant Governor Daniel Patrick from, what was it, Daniel Patrick? Is that his name? I think it's his name. Down in Texas, you heard him on the intro. Yeah, that's the seems to be the new line. Is that put yourselves on the pile, 70-plussers? I mean, are you serious? He was serious, but I bet you that guy has got the best medical care that you could possibly get. Crazy, crazy. But Fox News and Wall Street bankers, they want to send people back to work during the pandemic in order to protect the wealthy. And some will live and some will die, is their thinking. Hey, it's only patriotic. And the Senate passes a $2 trillion stimulus package. Looked like it was all set to be voted on in the House today. However, Republican Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky sought to basically force members to return to D.C. for the vote. Right? They passed special rules allowing members to vote kind of, you know, virtually or from online, send in their votes. But no, he wants to be a strict constitutionalist and force there to be a quorum and bring everybody back to D.C. Can't believe it. Even Trump was out there lambasting him on Twitter today. We'll see where that goes. And another signs of the apocalypse, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson tests positive for the novel coronavirus. And what, assuming that Donald Trump doesn't end up coming down with himself, what will he do, right, to pivot in order to win re-election in the fall? We're just waiting. We'll go through the options. We don't know, but there's a bunch of options. At least the table is set for, that's for sure. And Tom Wolf, if you remember, we talked about this last week. He went hard on the lockdown in Pennsylvania. We were pretty encouraged by that. But within hours, he basically backtracked on a bunch of that. He postponed the lockdown from, was supposed to start like first thing Saturday morning, like late Saturday or Friday night, 12:01 a.m. Saturday morning. That got postponed till Monday. Now there's a whole bunch of exceptions for places like the coal industry and gun stores. Yes, because that's necessary right now. It's been a shit show. And I've got to say, I've been tracking some of the media on this, like tracking in a loose way. And it's so interesting, like when we're reporting about what's happening in New York, what's happening in New Jersey, what's happening in Connecticut, what's happening in Ohio, what's happening in New York, you know, all this kind of stuff. And they conveniently leave out Pennsylvania every single time. And I'm thoroughly convinced that has to do with the fact they don't know what the hell's going on in this state. We shall see. And today's last call, I will play it by ear, everybody. I'll let you know a little bit about what Free Will is releasing. The releases are down a bit, you know, as you would kind of expect. They're still doing their takeout service that you can get through the app, which we can talk a little bit about that. And a little bit on our experiences just being out and about in the midst of all the crisis. Want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And you can make sure to download the Rick Smith Show daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. Rick has been tearing it up online right now, so I would strongly recommend that you get out there and listen to his stuff. And if you want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches' homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our lives, the fight of our future in 2020, and we're all in for that fight. Now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. And I should say that Sean and I are testing out a little bit of a new addition to our podcast. And that addition is the possibility of streaming on YouTube. Our members will get the treat. Today, we are actually using OBS Studio, which is one of the kind of podcast or kind of like live streamer programs that's kind of available. And we've got it set up. I don't think you're going to hear any difference in the podcast today, but our members will be able to see this kind of dry run of it. We are not streaming live today. What you will see on YouTube will be the traditional YouTube post that comes up, the auto post. But what we hope to be able to do is produce a better produce show, especially for this podcast, and potentially to kind of broaden out some of what we're doing here. If we can get this to work right, I've got a little bit of an issue with my video drivers on my computer. I'm going to have to get that either fixed or updated in computer. Probably going to need a second computer in order to really run this properly, but we shall see. It looks like it's going pretty smooth, at least as we sit here right now. So we'll see where we go. So anyways, that's the best reason right now that you could step up and become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Help us out, kind of get that equipment and, you know, move to that next step of producing what will be the best YouTube show in Pennsylvania. So, Sean, welcome to lockdown week 2, 3, whatever the heck it is right now.
I think it's our third quarantined episode. So,
yeah, I think our first one was it like right as things were getting started, right? I think.
Yeah. Like, it was three Fridays ago. It was 2 weeks ago, but it's our third episode.
I can't even keep track. I literally have lost track of time this week. I mean, my kids started like online learning. This was my first week of teaching online, transferring all my classes to kind of online. And the weeks, like my kids' week started technically on Tuesday instead of Monday. It was chaotic, and I literally had to remind myself three times this week that it's not Friday yet. Like, tomorrow is not the Friday. I'm sitting there thinking like, oh, I got to get ready for the podcast. I'm like, wait, that's like 3 days away. Right. I was supposed to show up for somebody's virtual class, and I got stuck dealing with tech issues with something on my daughter's like online learning platform and totally spaced it. I mean, it's been that kind of week.
Yeah. I actually do have a question for you.
Yeah, please.
Are you like willing to put your country in front of your life and, you know, go back to work?
Well, no, not me, but yeah, if they're 60 or over, sure. Yeah, absolutely. They can do it. As long as it's somebody else, Sean. I'm more than willing to let them risk themselves for the patriotic future of America.
Jesus. There's a bunch of stories this week I guess I want to talk about. Yeah. I too have been like losing time, pretty much like getting up like 9-10 o'clock in the morning because there's just nothing to fucking do, like, and it's just like wreaking havoc on my perception of time. And just like so far like this week I watched all the Lord of the Rings.
That's like a good thing. I'm very, very proud of you. I'm very happy about that. I like that.
No, it's one of my favorite, epics. You know, I feel like that's the time we're in, you know, like dark times, but maybe we come out of this on the other side.
Yeah, I think we should make this part of our regular feature of our last call from now on. We'll talk about things to do to pass the time and kind of things that we're going to do. I think that's actually a good idea.
Yeah. But the news stories this week were amazing. My favorite being, we didn't put in notes, but Rand Paul testing positive for coronavirus.
That happened this week? That was this week, seriously?
Yes.
Wow.
That was Sunday, yeah.
That's how it started off.
Yeah, and he fucked over the Senate votes on that because four of the members had to quarantine themselves. So, I thought it was amazing that Rand Paul gets tested and then still goes out and starts doing everything on a day-to-day basis, like go to the gym, have lunch with people, and then test positive as an asymptomatic carrier.
It's crazy. I mean, I couldn't believe that he was sitting there, and I thought, initial reporting came out that he got tested, and it was, later that day before he had the results that he actually went to the gym and then got results later. But it turns out there was, several days that passed, right? So he was actually...
It was a full week.
Yeah, it was a full week? See, it's like, I mean, like, you got to be kidding me. It's like...
going around fucking spreading that shit everywhere.
Really? Well, he's a doctor in quotes, so I mean, he should be able,
he doesn't have a license to practice.
Well, he's got his license. I mean, a license because he built his own accredited agency and basically accredits himself. Because that's what good libertarians do. You don't need no government.
But I also think the craziest shit I've heard this week were the line of Lloyd Blankfein coming out, the fucking bankers coming out this week.
Good Democrat.
And pretty much saying, a Democrat, a Democrat donor, pretty much coming out saying we have to, we can't crash the economy over coronavirus. We're going to kill some people for it.
Right. Well, this is where you see so starkly that when they're talking about the economy, those people are talking about the economy. All they mean is Wall Street. That is it. I mean, because those people, that's where they make all their money. Right. I mean, that's where they make all their money, and that's what they look at. It's just Wall Street. And you can see that. You can even see it when they started talking about the stimulus and started to talk about going back to work. The stock market goes up. Right. And they're like, hey, look, it's working. Meanwhile, we got record numbers of unemployment claims being filed this week as the rest of the country is hitting crisis mode.
Sugar high from Trump's fucking press conferences this week saying we're going to reopen the country in a couple weeks when that just ain't happening. That's just a fairy tale. But it's amazing, watching the Dow rally on that sugar high from Trump's fucking press conference saying we're going to be opening in a couple weeks when that's just categorically false. And I also think, man, what an organizing opportunity here for the left to really drive home the fact that these people don't care about you and they're saying it out loud. They would rather see you die from this fucking disease by going to work just to keep their wealth coming to them.
That's right. I think that's actually...
This is 1792 stuff. You know what I mean? French Revolution type shit that they're just saying. Yep.
We're going to take you and the queen out to the guillotine and shorten you a little bit.
No, but I mean, that's... But, that's, the type of, societal, I don't know. That's just the type of hubris... I don't even know what's the arrogance that they have. It's amazing that this was even a conversation this week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Fox News, I don't know.
I mean, what do you do, right? I mean, it's this is okay. So we just walk through some of the things that you just laid on the table there, right? I mean, just one. That you've got the big push that is, let's put it like this, the whole that the talking point, right, that you don't want the cure to be worse than the disease, right?
Yeah,
that is the one that started on Fox News, right? This shows you what the media
Fox
environment
business.
Right, Fox Business, right? That was bolstered by our good friend, kind of Lieutenant Governor Daniel Patrick from Texas, who goes out and said, yeah. I mean, nobody asked me if I'd be willing to lay my life on the line so that my kids can have a good Wall Street mix too as well. right? That could, and then within hours, there's Donald Trump out there repeating the same thing, right, from the podium with his coronavirus update. Right.
And then, like, Glenn Beck is saying it from his bunker, his self-quarantined bunker. Like, Glenn, why don't you go out in the fucking world and go back and put your money where your mouth is?
He's super patriotic, right? Yeah, I think he should be walking right out there, man. I think he should open up his own coffee shop right now. Right. And that, but, you know.
And then, like, also the fact that, like, the rhetoric behind, like, we're going to open up for Easter, which is, like, you know, like the holiest fucking day of the year for the Christians and the Catholics in this country. And like you are allowing, you are driving this, like, perpetuating this narrative that this is not a big deal still, and you're telling, you're pretty much like giving people the free rein to go to church on Sunday, Easter Sunday, and like
it's about right.
And yeah, and you're allowing the, you're going to allow this pandemic to rip through. Like, I mean, also, like, one of the things that happened in the 1918 Spanish flu breakout, there's this guy, Billy Sunday, was a really famous preacher, and he didn't believe in the pandemic and had like 20,000 people show up, and guess what? Everyone got the fucking flu.
Yep. It's the it was the slow burn Jamestown right there.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is pretty much like what we're doing.
Yep.
And it is mind-boggling. And I told my friends this, like, I'm like afraid, I'm sorry for the people who are like smart and forward-thinking but are stuck in like living in central bumfuck Pennsylvania, middle of nowhere, like where I'm at right here. Like, half the fucking area doesn't even believe this is real, probably,
right?
Because they're like, you know, West Shore Republicans. But like, it's you know, you're going to get other people killed by this as well, like, not just your congregation, but you're like going to spread this around, and there's going to be collateral damage because Trump is going around saying this shit on TV,
right? Well, and that's like, the thing. I mean, there's this guy on Twitter.
Fox News is turning into a full-on death cult at this
point. I was going to say, there's a guy on Twitter who changed his Twitter handle to Fox News is a death cult, or his name. Like, I don't know who that was.
Yeah, I did this about a month ago, and yeah. Like, I did it as a joke.
And now you're like, hey, that was kind of like...
forward thinking.
Exactly.
I mean, no, now they're embracing like the fucking death cult. Like, it is just, it is amazing. Like, these people are like Jim Jones, like Lynchburg, like the man. Liberty University is
gonna... Yeah, we didn't even talk about that in the intro. I mean, like, that just blew my mind. I'm like, hey, 5,000 students, come on back come back to be with, like, your friends.
And then Lynchburg's population is like 50% over the age of 60.
Yep.
Like, yeah.
I'm telling you, it's like you. This is like dystopian fiction, like that we're living. And you can't make half this stuff up. Now the thing is, you know,
I mean, they're taking themselves out. I mean, like, it's amazing how, like, I mean, like, this is like a really horrible, like, get out the vote strategy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Unless you're voting from the other side. I mean, I don't know what else to get you there.
Will dead people be voting?
Could be. I mean, we'll bring back, you know, speaking of dead people voting, like, you know, you look at what's going on in Louisiana. Right. And I say that because in part Louisiana had a long tradition. Like, that was like one of the places where dead people would show up to vote, quote unquote, like quite often. There was like all sorts
of Chicago as well.
Right. So but in Louisiana, like in New Orleans, you see what's actually, you know, what the consequences of you know, let's kind of
Mardi Gras.
Yeah. Let's kind of like, you know, celebrate the coronavirus. And this is what we're going to get. And now, you know, they don't have nearly the capacity, the hospital capacity, or the, you know, or frankly, the budget to deal with what the outbreak is going on now. I mean, from right now, New Orleans has the steepest trajectory, or however you call it, the steepest curve of rates of increase, in part because of the consequences of Mardi Gras. And the thing is that, you know, people...
We're still like... a week away from seeing everyone who out fucking drinking St. Patty's Day weekend.
Well, that's exactly it, right? I mean, I think that this week coming up is going to be, is where we're going to start to see like the consequences of kind of inaction and people's disbelief and the kind of, you know, the death cult moves of kind of getting everybody to pretend that, you know, nothing's wrong.
The surge of people going to the supermarkets, like.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, here's the thing. I have a lot of difficulty just keeping my own head straight on this stuff, to be honest with you, is that there's like these, you see what's happening in New York City right now, right? And, you know, the fact that they actually had to pull up a refrigerated truck kind of outside the hospital in Queens to deal with the dead bodies that are coming out of the of that hospital. Elmhurst, I think, is the name of the hospital. Which actually, I think a friend of mine from college used to work there. She's not there anymore, but if I remember right. But yeah, so they bring a refrigerated truck in there to bring out the bodies because the morgues aren't going to be able to handle the capacity. I mean, that's just they're not even at their peak yet, and these are the kinds of things that we're seeing. And my gut is saying that this week coming up is going to be when we're going to really start to see, you know, the capacities of our health system hitting crisis mode, not just in New York City, but around the country.
Yeah, no, and like, thankfully, like, I have not gotten sick yet. You know what I mean? Like, knock on wood. You know, I'm just looking, I'm counting down the days. Okay, like, it's been 3 weeks since the summit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's been about, like, I'm not sick yet. Like, you know what I mean? That's good. Like, you know, because we were all talking about that. Like, holy shit. Like, this is, like, back in March. This past week, I really limited my contact outside. I've got takeout once, but, like, that was from Pizza Boy, and it was an online order, and it was curbside pickup, so it was just, like, boom, just put it right in the car. Mm-hmm. But, like, no, I mean, like, I had to go, I went to the farmer's market this morning to get stuff. You know, I was standing away from people, like a good 5 feet away from the glass and stuff like that. No, doing stuff like keeping my gloves on when I go out and stuff like that. It's no, I mean, it's just like, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know if you have this experience too, as well. I know I've talked to several other people that have had this similar kind of sensation, is that, things have changed, obviously. Right. But there doesn't also seem to be a feeling of just kind of like crisis in the air. And there's times, you know, there's good kind of chunks of the day that I'm just kind of like, you know, kind of forgetting about stuff. Right. In part because I'm, you know, taken up with like learning how to do online teaching and all this other kind of stuff. That's all new and that's different, but my kids are here. But then I take my dog out for a walk and I'm like, you know, yeah, it's a little quieter. Right. But it's, it doesn't feel like you're in the midst of this crisis, right? Especially if you're not living in one of these kind of in one of the major cities, and that sensation, you know. And at the same time, I'm watching the maps, right, in Bucks County where I live. I'm watching the maps, the you know, they have the color in sections of like where the virus is, and they start moving up. I had a student this week tell me that, and it's true that the first cases have been diagnosed in Perkasie where I live, right? So it's here. Right. And I think only this week, at the end of this week, that I really start to some of, you know, my neighbors seem to really be kind of taking that seriously and locking it down. But still, one of my neighbors is still kind of like, yeah, how much of this is actually a conspiracy? You know, like, so that doesn't bode well. Right. I mean, I have such a difficult time figuring out how deeply that sense of like, okay, we need to take this seriously. I don't know how deeply that's penetrated.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, I grabbed pizza this week as well. But no, like the
you're
guy
just a freaking vector, man. He's gonna track. Where's Sean Kitchen go this week?
No, like I've literally kept my contact down like two or three people a whole week, which is like,
no, I mean, I know you're good at this stuff. I'm just giving you your time.
Yeah, I mean, I had my point where I had to break down and get it. But no, it's just like, and he, like, the pizza, the kid, the guy's from Italy, and he's like, I'm watching this happen over in my home country. And he's like, I can't believe what's happening. It's like happening here now, like what's happening in New York City and all. Like, he's like, I didn't think this would happen in the United States. Like, I was like, yeah, it's like, I kind of looked down. I was like, I've been following this for about a month and a half. He's like, what? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, how did you know about this? And it's just like, just from following like the political stuff and us talking and listening to Sam Cedar, like, you know, like, but this was, it's amazing how this was on no one's mind.
Yeah.
Politically or anything up until like now.
Right now, yeah. I mean, seriously. I mean, I do think that, you know, we started off today with, you know, talk a little bit about Andrew Cuomo. Maybe a good kind of point to kind of step in. I think that Cuomo, yeah. His kind of pleas from the podium and, you know, or slash campaign for president. But his pleas there, I think, are the first thing that have actually have broken through. The broader discourse. And I think, frankly, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that all the major media outlets are in New York City. And they're all feeling it. And now they've got somebody that they can turn to that's literally right down the street.
I mean, also, like, someone from MSNBC died, or NBC yep, died this past right. week of the coronavirus. That's I mean, right. like, it. This is going to affect a lot of people. And it's yeah. just, like, it's this is the type of thing where, like, your wealth doesn't matter. Like, if you get it, you're fucked. It doesn't matter how rich you are. Like, if you're like you're this, I mean, we're getting to the point like when the hospitals are jammed, like your wealth isn't going to be able to save you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. I think that your money's not going to protect you from getting the virus. However, I'm pretty confident that if you got enough money, right? And I mean enough money where you can buy your own doctors and stuff like this, they're going to be fine. It's like but the vast majority of the population, like the 99%, right?
Yeah.
That's who's at risk, right? I mean, that's the other thing that's disgusting about even like with this this $2 trillion stimulus slash bailout package. The people that get the most benefit from that package are that kind of top 1% or 0.1%. Right?
I know. We saw this. The first death in Pennsylvania this week was a woman in her 60s who was afraid of the medical bills. Like, we're going to have a lot more people dying because they're afraid of their medical bills.
That's right.
And, like, I mean, like, if this ain't an argument for pushing for Medicare for all, you know, universal health care, when is it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if this should be a no-brainer at this point. I mean, even like initially, I mean, you know, it's so wild to watch these, you know, this is where you realize that, look, so much of the Republican Party really has become about kind of like market fundamentalist ideologues, right? I mean, it is a religion, right? At this point, there's no other way of describing it because like when it became absolutely clear that the only way to really respond to what we're doing now is making sure that everybody's got access to health coverage, right? Not access, everyone has health coverage. Right, yeah. Everyone's going to get treatment for free. Right, there's going to be no bills. It's not going to be affordable, as centrist Democrats like to say. No, it's going to be there. Period. Right, testing there. Period. Right, that stuff should be absolutely no brainer because there, like you were saying, it's like you know the virus doesn't kind of pick and choose kind of which class of people it goes after. Right, it's just a virus.
Yeah.
Right. So, and this became clear how to deal with. And when everyone's being told to stay home, right. And nobody has income, or a large percentage of people don't have income, it becomes pretty clear that, hey, like a UBI, right, as your baseline needs to be there.
MMT is becoming very popular over the past couple weeks.
Well, this is just it. This is where I want to go to. Like, it's like Rashida Tlaib, right, put out this proposal. I have it sitting over there. I should have brought it over here.
Print the fucking coins.
Right. So, like, print $2 trillion coins. Now, I don't know if this did not get a lot of coverage, right? And I know we are, I understand we are all over the place today, right? So I'm kind of jumping from topic to topic. I get it. But I mean, I think all this stuff is connected and try to keep it all sorted in your head.
I think now's like the point of like saying fuck deficits. They obviously don't matter. Republicans have showed us they don't care about deficits, right? And it's time to start applying MMT. Like, you know, like we have a like are we deficits don't matter because we have a fiat currency.
Right.
We have a currency it just based on trust and fiat. Like that's it. There's nothing backing it. There's no gold standards to it. There's no liquidity to our currency but it's built on trust in the American dollar.
Right.
Like, so we can just print money and fucking cover these things and that's it.
Well, let's, okay. So everybody who's not familiar with this, MMT is modern monetary theory. Okay. And modern monetary theory is not, it's not something that is like people are inventing, like it's a theoretical philosophical idea. It's actually as, and, Stephanie Stelton, who's like basically one of the lead people on this. She's at SUNY Stony Brook. She's been all over the place in the media lately because people are looking to her finally, right, to explain it. And she's really good at explaining this stuff. But it's basically saying what MMT is not like a theory, like a new philosophy of money. What it essentially is, it's a description, primarily a description of actually how money and funding works, right? And what Sean was saying there about a fiat currency, basically what that means is that the government says the government owns the money, right? The government has a monopoly over printing money. They're the only ones can do that. And because of that, the government can't go bankrupt. The only way the government could go bankrupt is if we kind of pretend that it can, right? So the idea there, and again, she's very careful, and she's like saying, look, it doesn't mean that the government could just print, like, you know, like just like nonstop money all the time. If it did, yes, it would have impacts, right? People are so concerned about inflation and deficit and all this stuff that comes out of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. But she's saying, look, that's really a misreading of how this all this stuff works, right? And so, and I believe that one of the reasons why she was also an advisor to the Bernie Sanders campaign, both in 2016 and 2020. And I also believe that this is one of the reasons why Bernie did not kind of go out full fledged and kind of say, here's how I'm going to pay for kind of Medicare for all. Here's how I'm going to pay for all this stuff. Because he understood, I believe, that the government has the ability to expand its own kind of funding, right? And we saw this in Rashida Tlaib's proposal, that kind of piece of legislation that kind of dropped out this week, didn't get a ton of coverage, but it was really important, right? And it was about minting $2 trillion coins, all right? And that comes from this it's a provision that I think it got a law that was passed, I believe, in 1993. Or 96, I believe it was 93, though, where they basically said, and it was a recognition of exactly what modern monetary theory describes, is basically saying that, look, there is a the government can basically print these coins. They have to be platinum coins, right? And they basically give them to the Federal Reserve, and they force the Federal Reserve to buy them, right? And because $1 trillion coin, and that they have to hold on to them permanently, right? And so because $1 trillion coin, you can't just like go to the grocery store with that, right? It has to be broken out. So what the Fed does is they then basically they release additional money to compensate for that. So on their balance sheets, right, it's they've lost zero money, right? Because this is an exchange, it's a complicated problem, exchange of treasury bonds, but the treasury bonds are actually like zero interest. So it's a wash, right? But it's an accounting way, right, of kind of making sure that these things balance out. You're not kind of like spending things that are not technically on the books. That's the real concern. So they put this provision in that you can mint these platinum coins in any amount. Right. And so Rashida Tlaib's basically saying that we should be using this provision right now. And you basically mint these $2 trillion coins.
Not one.
Two of them, right? So two $1 trillion coins, right? So there'll be two coins. They get kind of go to the Fed. It goes out. And the reason why that's important and why that is kind of like a key move, it means that all this spending that's happening right now, this $2 trillion in spending that just got passed with the stimulus bill, right? That doesn't count as debt, right? That is essentially like paid for because of this provision in law, right? And because, as Sean was saying, we have a fiat currency, right? The government says by fiat, they dictate, they say, this is what we have in terms of our currency. Then therefore, there is no debt that's associated with that, right? And again, if you really want to go down the rabbit hole of MMT, it's actually really, really fascinating, interesting. I suggest that you check out Stephanie Stelton's work. She got some great YouTube explainers and stuff. Go look at that and it'll take some time to wrap your head around, but then you got to see how straightforward it is. So her proposal this week was to do exactly this, right? Let's put it here. And again, it's not going to get, you know, we could be like straightforward about it. The fact is that it's probably not going to pass, right? As we've seen here. But the interesting thing about it is that it is now in the mix in terms of discussion. so that we can see that, again, not just this crisis, not just in response to the coronavirus stuff, but we see this is what we have to look forward to in our future. Right. As future pandemics come on, as future crises come on, how are we going to make sure that most Americans are taken care of? Well, Rashida Tlaib just showed us the way. Right. She kind of put that out there and kind of so that now we have to kind of see it and we have to recognize it for a broader consumption. And I think that, you know, that's old irrational at this point, Sean.
Yeah. And no, I mean, like, I feel like a lot of things are about to become rational, a lot more thinkable, like we're seeing it happening in real time, you know, and I think workers are starting to realize that they have, that they are worth more than capital. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And so it's going to be interesting to see like what happens after this. Like, do the Republicans full stop handing out checks in 4 months, or do we pass another stimulus to get us through this?
Right.
Like, do they see going down? I mean, like, it seems like Republican leadership were not like jumping on to Trump's words about, they don't, at least like they weren't taking him seriously about reopening the country, but we'll see.
But it would be a fabulous timeline, Sean. It'd be a beautiful timeline.
Yeah.
Imagine the story, the movies that could be done about reopening on Easter Sunday. It'd be like a miracle, Sean.
I wonder like how much he's hurting with his fucking companies all shutting down.
Oh, I'm sure a lot, because you saw that there was a doubling down this week. That's one of the reasons why the Senate bill got delayed, right? Is because there's provisions in that bill preventing money being going to bail out the Trump properties, right? And money going to his kids, right? And then then it was all set to go, and then it got paused all of a sudden. We got a lot of news. Ah, Democrats are holding it up. And it was like, Schumer, I give him credit for this. He caught it. Right. And he saw that the provision they put in to try to prevent this being about a cash bailout for the Trumps, right, was kind of like watered down or taken out. So he's like, no, whoa, it's going back in. Right.
Yeah.
Now, again, that's all great drama and everything like this. And yes, it's true that I think that, you know, yes, you got to prevent that at the same thing. But we got to remember, this is not all about Trump, right? This is about the rest of us. So that's great that you stopped in for bailing out his own kids. That's fabulous. But you all decided not to impeach him. So I don't know what the hell you're doing. You all decided not to put those provisions in the articles of impeachment to begin with. So I don't know what the hell you're doing. So let's get back to the rest of us here, right? Which are things like, we need kind of universal health care now. Right. Like, we need single payer now. We need kind of like a UBI now. We need like full coverage of full in, or what do you call it? Job guarantee now to actually build out our kind of our infrastructure. Because the one thing that we have to have, we have an opportunity here, is that as we're kind of like funding like an $2 trillion, right, going off just for this one, that's unprecedented amount of money going out for a bailout kind of recovery act, then we should be able to dictate how that is used. Instead of going back to our shit jobs, right, instead of going back to our kind of like, you know, crappy healthcare, we should be demanding that, you know, baseline $15 an hour plus easy access to unionization, right? We should be demanding single payer healthcare for everybody, right? This is if this is not the clear sign, I don't know what is. I don't know what is.
Yeah.
But, whoo, oh God. But yeah, so that's a good thing. But so I don't know. We could obviously talk about this. We could go around in the circles of this forever. But I one of the things that Sean brought up right before we went on recording here, and I think it was a good question, so I just want to throw it in here instead of like us having the conversation off the air. But you brought it up. Say, how exactly does Trump pivot? Right. From where we are into try to win election. And, you know, that's a great question.
Yeah. So like Trump's approval rating right now is like what is all time high. His approval rating during this crisis is at like 55%. I think that's going to change once people like see the seriousness of this. Right. I don't think a $1,200 check is going to get them to vote for them. Like, yeah. Help. Bush did that. I think once the bodies start piling up in the hospital system and the healthcare system, like, utterly just breaks down and Trump is doing nothing, like, I think that's going to change. And I think, like, that's when he's going to lash out. Like, do you think, like, I think he's going to make a racist pivot somehow? Because you know it's coming.
I mean, there seems to be very few options that he's got. I mean, it's either got to be that.
Like, I haven't seen him attacking immigrants yet, right? Like the Mexicans or Hispanic immigrants. Like, there's
not yet.
No, and I don't see like, but like I could absolutely see him pinning the blame on this, like on New York City, where this outbreak is happening, even though it's worse in Louisiana. And like blame this on this is New York's problem, like that they cause for the rest of us. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. So yes, right? And I think that up until this week, there was a potential narrative for Republicans that would kind of, you know, that just basically from their playbook anyways, that that would pit the coasts against middle America, right? Yeah. That, you know, because it started in Washington State, right? And then it's kind of New York City. That is now becoming increasingly problematic, like, as a narrative, simply because, you know, we got Louisiana. Here's what happened when I thought about Louisiana. Is one of the other potential pivots here.
And Florida, too, right now.
And Florida, right? And if you look at Florida, have you been following that stuff about the that thermometer? Right? That stuff is, if that data remains good, Florida is going to explode very soon, right?
Yeah.
With cases of this. And given the kind of like, you know, the number of, you know, kind of like older Americans that live there, right? Older folks that
and
live
everyone
there.
Who went on fucking spring break.
Well, exactly, right? I mean, this is not good.
I mean, we're still like a week away from like this. You think about it, like Mardi Gras was a month ago, and we're now seeing the effects of this in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, I mean, no, we're like a week. Yeah, we're still a week or two out until this just goes like full bore.
Right. Well, here's the other pivot that's got me concerned. Right. Especially after when Louisiana started, it became clear, especially New Orleans. Right. Especially after our Mardi Gras, when that kind of like exploded. I'm waiting to hear. This is a potential extra or next pivot point. I'm waiting to hear stuff from kind of say right wing evangelical sectors. That will look at this as about excess, right?
Sinners,
exactly, right?
Stephanie Borowitz.
The Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Well, exactly, right? This is
we need a day of humiliation, prayer, and fasting.
Well, this is exactly. I mean, when you brought that up, and I started thinking about her, I started thinking about, okay, well, this is Mardi Gras, right? How do you actually say, well, you know, Louisiana, red state, right? Well, maybe it's just because they give all this license to kind of debauchery and all this stuff, and, you know, it's time to rain down the fire, right? I'm waiting for that. Right. And that the fact that Daniel Patrick from, from Texas, Lieutenant Governor of Texas, is talking about making sacrifices and things like this, that's dangerously close to that kind of discourse. And if Trump latches on to that, that gets us to a whole new level of like holy shitness.
Like Christian fascism.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, my mind goes to sci-fi dystopian stuff. I get it, right? I understand. But if I'm playing out different scenarios and different logics, I mean, I think right now, I think they're probably – what's more likely for his pivot at this point is simply to try to stay with blame the Democrats and look for ways of setting Democrats up for just kind of stumbling and missteps and being able to blame that the reason why we didn't respond is because of the Democrat inaction. And some of that seems to be working right now, given the fact that his approval ratings are up. When it comes to the coronavirus in particular. So I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I think the messaging, I do want to take a break and just go on to the next. I mean, we can talk about Biden.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't we do that? Let's talk about Biden after the break. That's a great win. All right. So for today, as we move into our break today, I want to give, especially now, I want to give a special shout out to Jonathan Mann. I didn't know this until afterwards, until I got chatting with him a little bit. Jonathan Mann holds the world record for composing the most consecutive days in a row of composing a song. I kid you not. Right? He's got a song a day project. He dropped this week. He dropped a
a very fitting song that fits right into, especially when we're talking about what happened to Rashida Tlaib. And so I reached out to Jonathan Mann this week and I asked if we could use his song that he posted up to Twitter. So big shout out to Jonathan Mann. Please do check him out. You can check out Jonathan Mann at podcast.jonathanmann.net or just jonathanmann.net to check out his stuff. Follow him on Twitter at songadayman with two N's for man. But this one was just gold. So we're going to leave you today for our transition for our little break with Mint the Trillion Dollar Coins by Jonathan Mann. We're going to remind everybody to become a patron. Go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member today for as little as $5 a month. Mint the $2 trillion coins, suckers.
1, 2, 3, 4. Mint the trillion dollar coins. Mint the trillion dollar coins. Oh, you gotta mint the trillion dollar coins. Mint the trillion dollar coins. Mint the fucking coin. Mail the fucking check. Mitigate the fucking coronavirus. $2 trillion coins, no additional debt. That's the power of the purse, baby. Send your edge. Every person in the country gets a credit card with $2,000 on it. This isn't hard. And when we say everyone gets one, we mean absolutely everyone. So mint the $1 trillion coins. Mint the $1 trillion coins. You bastards.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2002. That was the day that the U.S. Supreme Court handed down its decision in the case Hoffman Plastic Compound Incorporated versus the National Labor Relations Board. This case had profound importance for undocumented workers in the United States. The conflict began 14 years before, as the United Cork, Linoleum, and Plastic Workers of America began an organizing drive at Hoffman. The California company made plastic pipeworks. Hoffman retaliated by firing all the employees that supported the union. One of those fired was Jose Castro, an undocumented worker. The fired workers took their case to the National Labor Relations Board, where they won. The board ruled that the company had to provide back pay for the workers it had unfairly fired. This ruling included Castro. The company decided to fight the decision, and the case wound its way through the courts for a decade. Finally, it arrived on the Supreme Court docket. The highest court in the land ruled in favor of the company in a 5-4 decision. It ruled that as an undocumented worker, Castro could not claim back pay. Writing for the dissent, Justice Stephen Breyer warned that the decision, quote, might very well increase the strength of this magnetic force of undocumented migration. If employers do not worry about the penalties for breaking the law that protect workers, they might be more likely to hire undocumented labor. 10 years after the case, an article in the Princeton Law Review called the decision, quote, a powerful legal symbol of exclusion of immigrant workers. Trying to divide the workforce has long been a tactic of owners determined to break the power of labor.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney sitting here once again with Sean Kitchen as we are in our lockdown quarantine show number 3. As you've seen, our normal way of kind of coming at the show is kind of transforming as we speak as our show becomes infected with the coronavirus itself. Just bear with us for a little bit as we do this. It's going to be a little bit more free-flowing for the next couple weeks is my guess, given the amount of stuff that's going on. But this is normally our PA focus. We're going to do PA Plus today, right? Just kidding, it's a PA Plus. It's like, you know, Medicare Part C or something like that, whatever, Part D. So can we start, before we talk about a little what's going on in Pennsylvania, can we start a little bit with the presumptive nominee, what's his name? starts with a B. Biden. Biden. Yeah.
Hiding Biden.
all right. What's your take, man? Seriously.
I think he should just like not go back on TV at this point. Let's go. Okay. We're fucked. That's my like.
Fair enough.
Like that's my like that's my feeling. If he's nominee, we're fucked. I don't know. I mean, the fact that like he doesn't want to make this, he came out in the media and said he doesn't want to make this a political issue with Trump. When I can think about like 10 different issues you could make: universal health care, paid sick leave, minimum wage increase. Like all these worker advances that like people have been fighting for, like unions have been fighting for the past 10 years, like these are all now like actual like platform issues.
Right.
Like paid sick leave is going through the roof, the recognition of that. Like there are things you can do to make this political right now. And I think that like it is like absolutely a mistake that Biden was off the air for a week hiding. No one knows where the fuck he was at. And then also, like, not willing to, like, bludgeon Trump with. I mean, like, this is absolutely,
well, Sean, I think you're being a little unfair there. You got to recognize the fact that, I mean, he was hard at work building his podcast studio in his basement. I mean, come on. I mean, that takes a lot.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, look at this. It took me, like, to get this set up that we've got here today, it took me probably, I don't know, like 3 hours or so, and you know, and he's old, so I mean, you gotta spread that out over time, and you've got a crew that's got to do set up the different camera work.
But okay, so like the thing, but like my idea, like thing with this is like the fact that like he said that he doesn't want to make this a political issue about Trump is just mind blowing.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, like it's, I mean, Trump. His approval rating is going through the roof right now, and Biden just does not want to make this a political issue against Trump. Like, yeah, it is a fucking political issue against Trump. Like, sorry. Like, you know, like our organization, we talk about, like, you don't score points by playing like defense. You know, you only score when you play on offense.
Right.
Like, yeah. And you like, I mean, like, this is where I think with Biden, like looking so fucking terrible on TV, like then this leads into like Andrew Cuomo,
yeah,
being the savior.
That's right,
for like the party.
That's absolutely right.
And it's also like it's showing a couple things. Like either Biden is in way over his head, which he is obviously. He never had the heart to do this. Like he was setting out to be a torchbearer, a seat warmer for someone else. Like. To set up a line of secession, and you know, probably wasn't even like totally in it to begin with. Besides, just rat fucking Bernie, right? That's pretty much like the reason why he's there is because the Democrats,
I agree,
absolutely hated Bernie,
right?
And you know, like we were talking about this earlier, if the Democrats really wanted a unity candidate, they all could have rallied behind Liz Warren and have her as a nominee.
And I agree.
They didn't. Like they just went with like. And that's where I think like Warren's campaign was playing towards, like being the unity candidate, like getting those people who all rallied behind Biden to rally behind Warren. And
no, but I'm like, okay, look, so we have two things. Go ahead, sorry.
But like, okay, so like that's like a side tangent. But like, and now we have someone who is not fully stable mentally, and who I think like didn't fucking sign up for this. Like he didn't sign up for having a pandemic, like destroying any hopes he ever had to become president.
No, that's right.
And I think like the reason why he wasn't on TV for the past week, he's probably said, "Fuck it, I don't feel like dealing with this."
I don't know if he's saying. I mean, I don't know. I think he's like.
I think that's what what it puts off though.
I don't think it's a fuck it. I think it's more like, oh shit. I think it's not like, no, I didn't sign up. It's more like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't sign up for this, and now you want me to do what? I don't know if I can do that. I mean, that's the way he comes across to me, right?
Number
one, he started his campaign without a policy platform,
yeah.
Right? His campaign was about saving the soul of America because of Charlottesville. right? That's how he launched his campaign. And I think that was what they wanted to run. They wanted to run. I agree with you 100%. It was meant to set someone up for to make the transition that initially the, like, you know, the Democratic Party elite were basically, okay, we need somebody who's going to be recognizable.
And Biden said this, my vice president should be.
Right.
Boom, a woman like
who's capable of taking over this stuff, right? Exactly.
Yeah,
and he even hinted early on in his campaign that he was actually considering just running for one term.
Yeah,
right. So I mean, all that was laid out. The problem was, I think that there was also they said, okay, we got Joe Biden. Joe Biden's going to be kind of out in front. He's going to be the one we have. But there were other factions within the Democratic Party, like elite, the leadership, right, who also were saying, well, maybe we actually needed kind of pivoting towards that next generation. So I think that's where, like, Kamala Harris was launched initially with a lot of promise, right? And I think that forget the Bloomberg thing. I don't even care about Bloomberg anymore. But it's like Kamala Harris in particular, I think, was going to see there. Then Pete Buttigieg came up, and then there were some people toying around with him. So I thought that – I think they imagined, okay, look, Joe Biden, we can fade him out, right, if need be. But then with the collapse of the Kamala Harris campaign so quickly, right, and then – and she, you know, by taking good chunks out of Biden, right – and then Pete Buttigieg finding, like, there's no traction for that guy. They were forced to go back to Biden, but then, you know, they find that there's no there. And because that there had been this, you know, insistence that not just we have to defeat Bernie at all costs, but the hatred towards the progressive wing of the party, right, prevented those people in power, with the exception, I have to say, David Plouffe was on MSNBC in some of these kind of post-debate discussions about directions of the campaign. And he was one of the people that kind of was hinting at maybe we need to be looking at Warren, right? And I'm not saying this, like, before Bernie people jump on me, right? I'm not saying that, yeah, Elizabeth Warren is just like Bernie Sanders. No, I recognize there's differences and things like that there, right? But for me, it's like, we don't live in an ideal world where we actually have a third party that's going to be, like, the most progressive. It's not like that right now. And to pretend it's otherwise is just insane to me, right? This is why I think what Ryan Grimm said this past week about, you know, the fact that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are not kind of working together, right, around the stimulus is a condemnation of the left. And I agree with that, right? And I'm not saying that, well, these two are just together and that, you know, they're just the same. Like, Michael Brooks has been all about kind of wanting to keep these divisions between Sanders and Warren. And look, and I agree with keeping that alive so we understand it. But to pretend that we're in some, you know, Bernie-only world is, in my mind, is just not connected with the reality of our political situation right now. And so those two should have been working in concert with each other, right? Right now, because they could have staked out their claim as the umbrella of the progressive left. That didn't happen, right? And so I think that's where we are. So now, you basically allowed Elizabeth Warren's campaign to tank, right? And her campaign did her no favors, because when they were trying to pivot towards the unity candidate, the way that they did that is in a traditional Democratic fashion, like let's be like nothing to everybody. Right. Instead of trying to actually make a stay with her campaign, they took her out of that, and that sank her campaign. Right. And so now you're left with Biden being the only one standing. And now we're seeing reemerging on MSNBC, because you can chart what the Democrat Party is thinking about. Now they're turning towards, you know, America's crisis daddy. Right. As Sean has termed him, Andrew Cuomo. Right. It's like, now we need some other stability on the right. Because
I mean, but also, like, at this point, I'd fucking take Cuomo.
I wouldn't have said, are you kidding me? I would totally, I mean, I can't stand Andrew Cuomo, right? No. But I'll take him in a snap, man. Are you kidding me?
I would rather have a craven dickhead politician like Andrew Cuomo in there who, like, knows how to play the game and understands power. Like, you know what, I mean? Like, he understands
power better than most politicians that are out there, yes, right now.
I mean, like, he understands power. Let's put it out there. I mean, like, he's swayable when, like, yeah, no, like, I would. It's going to be interesting. I mean, like, like the Cuomo, like, does he actually become a thing for this, or is this just like Democratic Twitter, like, joking around and having fun?
No, I think this is look. I think this is, again, this is this is cosplay.
This is like wishful thinking.
It's cosplay. Right. Yeah. It's like what they're doing is they're toying with the reality of this stuff, and they're trying it out to see how it fits. right? And I don't. The problem is I don't think the Democratic Party has like the spine to actually carry through with that, because they'd be too worried about upsetting Biden people.
Right? I don't really think that would happen.
I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not, that's the way I look at it, and I think that
So like, this is also with Biden. I mean, if you're within the Democratic Party, I mean, I've had these conversations with people over the past year. Everyone fucking knows that Biden's mental capacity is declining.
Of course they do.
I mean, and these are people and people have been talking about this since 2018 when he was campaigning in Pennsylvania, and everyone knows he's lost a step.
Let's not talk about people. Let's talk about you. Right. Because when you went out to one of his campaign events, right, you saw him, this was a long time ago. And that was, you came back from that and you're like, man, he just did not look great.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was not in the midst of the campaign. I still remember that conversation when you were like, man, did you see him? Like you called me. We were talking to something like this. You're like, man, he's clearly
this is a week before the election in 2018.
Yeah.
And stumping for Democratic candidates throughout the state, and he ditched his speech, completely rewrote it, came out an hour late at this rally, and he just wasn't holding it together.
Yeah.
And people just said this is Biden being Biden. He had no energy to him, and for me there, I was just okay, there's just no way he's gonna be the nominee, but just simply because he can't even get through campaigning, stumping for people during the midterms.
Right, exactly.
When it's not even that exhausting.
When you're being brought on as the celebrity guest, right? I mean, not as the person who's out in front, and he couldn't even handle that.
Yeah, but this has just been fact within the party, and it's just are there people within the actual that part of the party, I don't know if it's the DNC or within the inside circles of the establishment party, they have to realize this guy is not mentally competent. Are they trying to figure out an out for him now or no?
I think there's a lot of them are trying to figure out an out for themselves, to be honest with you. I think this is where Crystal Ball has been really good about this, and Sagarangeti too,
and
well,
it's
right?
Also, I think if Biden is the nominee and he loses, I think that whole entire grift within the Democratic Party is over.
Yeah, I don't Perez see how the consultant racket and all that kind of stuff. I don't see how that survives in the same way that it does before. I have to say, the one thing that has been eye opening for me,
and it's also these are people who are still pissed off at Bernie supporters who think that Bernie supporters tossed the election in 2016, and not they're still pissed off at Bernie supporters from 4 years ago, because they think that it was Bernie supporters not voting.
I'm telling you, it's like an extension of high school is what it is. I mean, if you think about this as in on high school dynamics. Right. What takes precedent in high school dynamics, right, in terms of popularity, in terms of who's on the in crowd, who's the out crowd? I do think a large percentage of what's actually happening right now and the Democratic Party's inability to move on this has to do with it's locked into those kind of interpersonal dynamics. And this is what Crystal Ball has been really good about pointing out, and said, as disgusting as this is.
And these are people who are 50 in their 50s and 60s.
That is correct.
Who have been doing this stuff for 20 or 30 years. I'm not saying they're bad. They're just stale. And they're not with the times.
Well, but then you don't have any kind of authority, right? Again, that's the one of the problems on the left and the progressive left, Democratic Party stuff. You don't have like a party in the way the Republicans have a party, right? Where you've got this top down dictate, and that's actually a good thing, right? It's a good thing that we're not having dictates, but we also don't have a counter theory of power in our institutions. Right. And I mean that not just the Democratic Party per se, but it's this kind of dispersed locus of power. And there's a lot of cool stuff that happens because of that. But when it comes to actually having to kind of put your foot down and move in a direction, a good chunk of people just run scared because they don't want to upset their interpersonal relationships with other people. And we can't afford that right now. And so, people's foo-foos are going to get hurt right now. That's going to be what it is. But I mean, we're talking about people dying here, right? And that has to take precedent over your comfort level, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, like, this is something that's just disturbed me, and I'm just kind of curious your perspective on it. It's like, you know, I think both of us, I'll speak for you, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. Last week and last Friday, we're very encouraged to see that Governor Wolf was actually taking some pretty strong steps forward in terms of, you know, calling for kind of shutting down things across the state, making sure that bars and restaurants were closed, non-essential businesses, non-life-sustaining businesses were all going to be kind of shut down as a way of like, taking pretty dramatic steps towards containing any further outbreaks. And that was supposed to take effect at 12:01 a.m. Saturday morning last week. But then within hours after we got done recording, he was also beginning to walk that back, as it was reported, because of pressure from people like the coal industry and the kind of natural gas industry.
The gun industry.
And the gun industry and the kind of Chamber of Commerce. And so he did. Commonwealth Foundation.
And Americans for Prosperity. Yeah, like... And he's walking back on a lot of things, but, like, I think what's more – I mean, like, I think it's absolutely bullshit that he walked back on the gun stores being allowed to open. I mean, this is a time where people are going to be trapped in their houses. There's going to be women trapped with abusers.
Exactly.
And, this is going to enable people to go out and needlessly get guns. And people can actually die because of this. Like – especially during these times with domestic violence disputes that are happening. And I think that is just completely fucking asinine that he did that. Like, I also think that we should probably have a statewide lockdown at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of ridiculous that he's been piecemealing this together. And it's also like some house staffers that I'm friends with are like, a lot of people are puzzled by what Wolf is doing.
It makes no sense. I mean, look, this is the end of his terms, right? I mean, this is like, he's not running. He's not
like the Republicans are, all they're doing is like just fucking around to make themselves seem relevant, which is not helpful at all.
No, it's not. It's not. And I think
they have to just be called out on that, like, to stop their fucking games.
But they won't, though. You know they won't.
No, they won't. And it's been interesting, like, listening to these press conferences, like, because, like, you're getting to hear who's asking the questions. Like, this is from Penn Live. And Penn Live is, like, literally just, like, repeating questions that are submitted to them from, like, the Chamber of Commerce or the Americans for Prosperity and stuff like that. Like, about, like, these – I mean, like, what's the point of, like, obstructing with the governor at this point? Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, I mean, the question should be like, I mean, this is what, you know, you and I talked about this on the phone yesterday, is like, or day before yesterday, probably. And I, you know, was saying is like, one thing that I don't get is like, if you're the governor at this point, right, and you feel all this quote unquote pressure, like, first of all, I don't know the pressure. What are the consequences of that pressure? That doesn't even make sense. And why wouldn't you be the guy who's out there being like, okay, I hear that you're worried about making your profits in the coal industry, or I hear that you want to sell more guns and that you're gonna threaten to sue me, but I'm gonna go with science. I'm gonna go with science, who tells us that if we want to save people's lives, this is what we're gonna do. So sue me, right? If you need to sue the government in order to try to kind of like, because you want more people to die, have at it. I said, I'm going to go with the science, and I signed up and I took a pledge to protect the people of Pennsylvania, and that is what I'm going to do. That is a very simple thing to do, right? And that is within his control. So when you talk about pressure, I don't know what the hell the pressure could be. The Democrats are already in the minority, right? They're already in the situation where they're, you know, it's like, it's not as if they need to hold on to their majority. I mean, I don't know what it is. So why would you not be coming out and taking a strong stance here to say that we're going to protect people, and I don't care if you're going to threaten to sue us. Go for it. We're going to protect lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it really frustrates the hell out of me, and I don't understand it one bit. I can't pretend I understand it one bit.
Neither do I, but...
Well, good. We got that settled. I was hoping for, you know, maybe we could be able to come to some terms, but there you go. We'll just throw our hands up in the air because we don't know what the hell's going on with that.
Yeah, no. And it's, I mean, the legislature, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, no. Don't know. Yeah. I mean, like,
put your hands in the air. We don't know what to do.
At least they agreed to delay the primary until June 2nd.
That is true.
So.
So we're not going to have a whole bunch of people kind of like standing in lines, coughing on each other, spreading the virus more, right?
Oh, did you see the did you see the memo that was put out by like one of the election boards from the primary a couple weeks ago? They're telling if you voted in like the Illinois primary to go see a doctor immediately and get tested. God. And this is like the fucking primaries that like the DNC and Thomas Perez were telling people to go out and vote in.
That's like, just crazy to me.
Yeah.
And I saw the interviews with him. I mean, he's and that's like thanks Obama. Right? Because yeah. Let's remember that is that was Obama's pick to keep Keith Ellison out of the leadership of the DNC.
It's someone who actually wanted to do something for the party versus exactly. A technocrat.
Right, exactly. And
who has no party experience.
Right, exactly. And Tom Perez, right, reportedly at the time he wasn't lobbying for it, right? He was approached by Obama and his people to get there so to prevent Keith Ellison from having that position. So and I've watched him the interviews that he's been giving about the election, should the elections go forward, and it is the most incoherent, wishy-washy responses that are out there, kind of like, everybody gets to do what they're going to do. Even when people say, yeah, but the science is telling us that this is going to cause more problems, more deaths. He's like, well, we leave it up to the states. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You got to do better than that. But
yeah.
Anyways, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with today's last call. And today's last call, we're going to leave you with some, hey, what do you do with all that extra time that's on your hands sitting around your apartment or your house maybe just sort of preoccupy you? And not just beer, but some other kind of cool stuff, too, as well. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this with this week's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's this week's last call. Well, we usually talk about beer and space news and things like this, but, you know, given the lockdown, that we're going to start adding in some, what to do with all that time on your hands right now. Sean, what do you do, man? What do you do? What have you been doing to try to pass the time?
Smoking a lot of weed.
Well, there's that.
I've been going out, walking around, hiking. I visited Wildwood Park the other day, and holy shit, I have never seen that thing filled bumper to bumper. And I just got out of there.
Like, where nature becomes a hazard, right? Because there's so many people there.
I think, like, tonight, this weekend, I'm going to take my camera out. I haven't been out, like, taking pictures. So I'm just going to go on the riverfront taking photos of those, like, on the riverfront.
Uh-huh.
People who are not social distancing.
Yeah, exactly. Like the birds. You're going to go out and take pictures, spend time with the birds.
The herons will be coming back probably like sometime next week.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, they usually come back 1st of April. So they will slowly start being returning within the coming weeks.
So that's cool.
That's going to be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I've been spending, bulk of my week this week has just been trying to
stay up with the kind of online teaching and stuff and getting used to that. And I have to say that's actually it's been so far it's been a fairly positive experience. You know, in part because I think I had some really really good students and just to kind of stayed in communication with them about how we're going to do this. But you know, I've been spending extra time doing some of that stuff, and plus, you know, my kids are doing kind of online education now, so I've been trying to figure that out. We get lots of emails that are coming in from kind of the schools and that kind of stuff, but I have been trying to find some things that are, you know, I don't know, kind of more like stuff for the, you know, I don't know, absorb all this stuff. And I've been reading this book, and I'll warn you ahead of time, everybody out there, that if you are the kind of person that doesn't like to go down dark holes when the dark hole is right out your door, don't do this. But I'm reading this really awesome book called Severance. Hold on, let me bring it up. I thought I had it there, but it's by Ling Ma. And it was published like 2 years ago and kind of won kind of a bunch of awards. And it's basically this lead character. Her name is Candace Chen. It's a millennial, and the whole group is kind of really focused on kind of it's a very millennial kind of focus thing. And it's a group of people that have fled New York City after a pandemic, right? It wasn't a virus; it was actually a fungus in the book. But it's just remarkable reading this piece of fiction in this kind of like this future where, you know, that is totally dystopian, and having to deal with like, and it's kind of like a reverse zombie book, right? So in other words, this fungus affects people, but instead of them turning into zombies, they just kind of slowly start to kind of degrade, right? Where they resort to kind of repetitive actions that they're used to, like setting the table and having family dinner, even though they can no longer eat and function, and they start wasting away and things like this. It's very depressing. But the other reason why I'm suggesting it, especially for Al DeCoop fans, it also exists within the framework, and there's what I'm starting to see, it's a kind of a growing critique of global capitalism. Right, because that exists within this kind of this global supply line chains and stuff like this. So it's very, very cool. So that's been one thing I've been doing. The other thing is, have you checked out by any chance this new Netflix show called I Am Not Okay With This?
No.
All right, I'm going to recommend that one too as well. Did you watch Stranger Things at all?
I have not. No.
Oh God. Oh my God.
Ozark right. Season 3 returns today. So.
Right. Today, I understand that. But so I'm not okay with this. It's made by the same people that made Stranger Things. The lead character in this is this high school girl named Sydney. And it's also in that kind of like, it's got that 80s feel to it, but it takes place in a small kind of like post-industrial town in Pennsylvania. So more plug for checking it out. And it's for those of you who've grown up in those kind of towns, a lot of it's going to ring true just in terms of the affect of like, there's nothing to do and all this stuff. And I'm not giving you any spoilers in here, but because it's the whole basis of the show is that basically she starts to kind of exhibit powers, right, that she doesn't understand and tries to make sense of. So it's got all that kind of stuff. At the same time, it's kind of coming of age. At the same time, it's about kind of making sense of a kind of whole range of kind of the emergence in adulthood. So it's a really cool show. I've watched about half of them so far, and not only is like the character development like just freaking great, I'm loving it, but it's actually starting to get, I'm actually about like number six I think in the season, and it's actually gotten to be kind of creepy. So it's actually a cool thing to watch. So those are two of my at least gives right now. So are you? I know Sean has been like itching at, because he wants to actually start getting to Ozark now, and I'm cutting into his time. Actually, even really haven't recorded the podcast today.
Yes, I said that this morning. You're cutting into my time.
Exactly. It's like one of the first things he said to me. Right. Like, I just wanted you to know that this is really taking me back. So
there's nothing else going on.
So is it actually up streaming now?
Yes.
Is that what you've been watching? Watching on the
screen? No. It is. Today's Becca Rass's 30th birthday, so everyone's sending tweets out from the campaign.
Happy birthday, Becca Rass.
Yes. And
Rast is with a T, right?
Yes. With a T.
Yeah, well, very cool. Happy birthday to her. So, Sean, for those folks who have not yet got on the Ozark train, give us a little background of that and, like, where the I don't know if you want to, how much spoilers you want to get, but give us a little background on what the show's about.
It's a really good show. It's about money laundering for a drug cartel, and they're out in the middle of the Ozarks doing it. It's been so long since I've watched an episode. It's really good. It's a slower series to watch, but in season two, you've seen there's a lot of really good character development in the last season. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to see where this goes. It's gonna be interesting. I definitely think the wife will have a lot more of a lead role, is my guess. Mm-hmm. And just the way the gender roles and the character roles have pretty much switched in the second season. And I'm really looking forward to the acting and seeing what happens from the continuation of how last season ended. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't want to give out any plot.
Right.
They're on the tip of my tongue.
Right. And so here's my little suggestion for everybody too as well, because Sean was being a huge booster of Ozark for me. When he started watching, you got to watch Ozark. And I was kind of slow to get on board. I mean, not because I was I don't want to watch what Sean was, but just because time and stuff. And when I had a little time to do it, I started watching it. And just be prepared, if you have not watched Ozark yet, the first several episodes are very slow, right? And I only understood that as being a very intentional choice by the producers and the director and stuff until later on in the first season into the second season, right? If you can just stay with it and understand that,
the first five or six episodes,
yes, right, and it's it's kind of okay. This is slow down, but
it's dense as well.
Oh my God. It's it releases these little pieces of the plot, right? Where you start to question things, right? You're like, oh, that was a little bit odd, right? And then that starts to unpack, right?
Yeah. Maybe that person who you thought was an innocent, naive actor
is not. Yes. Right. Right. As a matter of fact, it's very, very different than what you thought, right? but it's really extraordinarily well written. The end of the second season,
especially when you get to the flashback episode.
Oh my God,
it sews everything together.
Then you're just what? And I remember those flashback episodes. I remember feeling so uncomfortable watching it because just my sense of where
you're
things
watching were it going. Like six episodes into the first season, and it just the flashback episode from there on, it just goes in a completely different direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're okay. You learn a lot of things about people, and you're like,
yep. And it gets better and better from there. And I think I have to say, I'm not going to, no spoilers here, but I got to say, the end of the second season, right? That was one of the best endings that I could ask for. I was on the edge of my seat at that point. I have to say, it was great. It was awesome. Yeah, so definitely get out there and watch it, everybody. I'm going to give one more plug. My wife and I are watching this now, and I think that I would strongly recommend it. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Tiger King?
What's that?
Tiger King?
No. Killing Eve. It's called Killing Eve. Right, Killing Eve. It's running. You can pick it up on. It's a BBC production for BBC America. It's a spy thriller, kind of dark comedy kind of thing. It's based on the Villanelle novel series by Luke Jennings. But the first season, the head writer of the season was Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is absolutely amazing. She and her writing is all over this episode or all over this first season. This stars Sandra Oh is kind of a lead thing, but it's fantastic. It's kind of the spy intrigue and things like this, and give you the breakdown of it. It's a British spy. I'm reading now from Wikipedia. It's a British spy thriller television series produced in the United Kingdom by Sid Gentle Films or BBC America. It follows Eve Pollastri, Sandra Oh, a British intelligence investigator tasked with capturing psychopathic assassin Villanelle. Jodie Comer, is her name, the actor. And as the chase progresses, the two develop a mutual obsession based on the Villanelle novel series by Luke Jennings. Each of the show series features a different female showrunner, which is awesome, right? It is spectacular. It is unnerving, and it's not what I appreciate about the show thus far is that even though you've got this kind of a psychopathic killer, this assassin, is that there it doesn't say go out of its way to kind of say glorify the acts of the killings, right? Which is one of the things I think that my wife and I were both a little not want to see, but it really focuses on the kind of the characters and the suspense and stuff. Fantastic series. Do check it out. Anything else you got, Sean? Any tips for the shutdown?
No. I actually finally got all of my photos edited from the Keystone or the PA Stands Up Summit, so sent them over this week. This pandemic kind of put a damper on my inspiration to do work.
Yeah, I hear that. I think that's true for everybody right now. I'm really serious.
Yeah, it was just it was good last Sunday. I spent all day editing a couple batches of photos, and I got that done this week. So that was really nice. So, and I'm looking forward to taking my camera out. Looking at the Middle Creek Wildlife Preserve. It's a really hot spot for migratory birds. Mm-hmm. Couple weeks ago, they probably had thousands of different sandhill cranes, tens of thousands of migratory birds taken off at the same time and all. Mm-hmm. So it's a season.
It's a season, man. There you go. Well, I do want to give a plug out here to my good old local brewery, community brewery, Free Will. Once again, they just announced that DDH Love Letter from the 90s is up in the online store right now. That just kind of come out. It's a fantastic beer. It's a hazy IPA brewed with oats, Bloody Butcher cornmeal from Castle Valley Mill, and milk sugar, and then double dry hopped with Galaxy, Mosaic, and Citra. It says creamy smooth with notes of tangerine, passion fruit, mango, and papaya. It comes in at 7.2 ABV. Now, because like every other place that they are shut down for kind of in-person visits, but they do have a pickup. You can go in and kind of pick stuff up. What they highly recommend is that any order should actually be going into should be between 12 and 6 daily. You need to pre-order or should at least pre-order at freewillbrewing.com/store. If you go there, and again, it's www.freewillbrewing.com/store, and you can go there and kind of pre-order. They will pack it up for you, and you can come and pick it up. Looking at their online store, I'm going to pick out some recommendations this week from their online store. I think this is how I'm going to proceed. Yes, DDH Love Letter from the 90s. Do check it out. That's fantastic. They do have Safe Word still available, which I have yet to pick up, so that's going to be on my agenda for the weekend. Safe Word is that kind of Imperial IPA with habanero. But I would also strongly recommend... Let's see, where is it? The sharing size chocolate caramel cookie. That one, I have to say, there's another sharing size that came out, was a coconut chocolate sharing size. That one I thought I was going to like a lot more, but the chocolate caramel cookie sharing size is absolutely fantastic. So check that out too as well. But do listen to me, then go to their store at freewillbrewing.com/store. Check out everything they've got there. You can order online and they'll have it ready for you to pick up. That's what I would suggest. I know that there are a lot of other local breweries. I was talking to somebody from, the Harrisburg area. I was talking about Trogues has been doing something very similar to this. A huge shout out to some of the distilleries.
Pizza Boy's having a sale case today, $40 for any case of beer that they have in the store of their own.
Nice.
So online order, pick up, and you can do it curbside. I did that the other day, and I might do that again today.
Yeah, well, I want to. Yeah, there you go. And I want to give you all another shout out to some of the distilleries in the area. I know a Boardroom Distillery down in the Lansdale area. They produce like absolutely fantastic vodka and gin and things like this. They have converted over a bunch of their distilleries to making hand sanitizer, which you can actually bring your container to go and to fill it up. And I know they're prioritizing medical professionals in the area. Which is absolutely fantastic. That is same true for Eight Oaks Distillery up in New Tripoli, Pennsylvania. They are producing hand sanitizer. They're looking to kind of say, you know, flood the Lehigh Valley with as much as they can produce. They are not at this point. I didn't look this morning, but at this point, they are not looking to are giving out individual stuff, but they're primarily trying to focus on institutions, but that may change too as well. And if you know of examples of people in the area throughout Pennsylvania who are kind of stepping up to try to kind of fill the gaps in supplies and stuff like that, that would be absolutely awesome. One other thing that I heard from my wife about this too as well, there's some bars in the area which what they had initially they would take a lot of say their cleaning products and things like this with to sanitize everything you know after the end of the day they go wipe down the tables and everything like this and in some cases have masks. Well, because they're all shut down now, they're starting to kind of like approach different places, doctor's offices and medical facilities, and kind of donating to them, saying, look, we're closed, we're not going to use this, and we know you guys need it. So if you hear that kind of stuff, please let us know. Drop us a line at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. We'll make sure we'll give them a shout. Anyways, that's all I got for today. Sean, anything else for the good of the order?
Nope. I am good. About to go enjoy the rest of my weekend.
Fantastic. Which entails going out to a park and then watching Ozark until his eyes bleed, right?
Yes.
All right, everybody. Well, hey, thanks for sticking with us. And look for some kind of changes going there. Our members, as a reminder, that the video of today's show is going to be posted to our Patreon site. That's patreon.com/RCPress. If you're a member, you can go there and you should be able to have access to that content sometime later today. And I'd appreciate your comments back because we're looking to see what it sounds like, what it looks like, what you think about it. And we're going to still experiment a bit before we kind of launch any of that stuff live. Just make sure that we can get it right. I know I'm working like three control panels right now in order to try to make this happen. So it's going to take me some getting used to on my end too as well. But in any case, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I appreciate you sticking with us. And we will be back next week, if not sooner, in the midst of the coronavirus lockdown. Thanks, everybody. And for one last giggles, Lieutenant Governor from Texas, Don Patrick.
No one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. My message is that let's get back to work. Let's get back to living. Let's be smart about it. And those of us who are 70 plus, we'll take care of ourselves, but don't sacrifice the country. Don't do that.